For England, James? No, Joe. For me, Joe. Me.
That's a good joke. You see, you wasted it.
No, that can be the drop. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another exciting edition of the Brothers Movie Factory. I'm your host, Ben. With me, as always, the brother of the Brothers Movie Factory.
Give you a hint.
A hint?
The right in front of you, and can open very large doors.
What knockers?
Dr. Knockers is my name.
Unse doce. Joining me as always, I don't know how we went from that to James Bond to the Pink Panther. I guess they're all great
spy thrillers.
Yeah, indeed. Joining me as always, Gus, the brother of the Brothers Movie Factory, and what do we have here for you today? Well, if you're new to the show, every week we watch a movie, we then take to the pod to discuss said film, what we liked about it, what we didn't, what worked, what didn't. We then submit that movie to the factory. That's where we take the film we just watched, and I'm gonna change it up, Gus, right now. That's where we take the film we just watched and we imagine what it would look like in a different way. Maybe it's modern booking. Maybe we're taking an older film and imagining what it would look like today with modern actors. Maybe we're taking a newer film and imagining what it would look like if it came out in like the 80s, or an animated film and imagining what it would look like live action. We're going to do some crazy stuff in the factory. We've evolved, and that's what we're going to say from now on. And so with that being said, then we do After the Factory. We have a little bit of a question anytime she comes, and we close at the show. So with that being said, last week we did Twister, and we jokingly said, as we have this gap week before we get into June Carrey, where we'll be watching all Jim Carrey films, we decided that we were going to do another Bill Paxton piece, because Bill Paxton was so good in Twister. However, we decided, with the new news of MGM being bought by Amazon for, what, $8.5
billion? Billion, kajillion, yen.
That's unfair. But, yes, with MGM being bought by Amazon, we decided to do a James Bond picture, obviously, an MGM-produced series. Probably their most, I would say their most famous. Rocky, but I would argue James Bond's probably MGM's most famous film franchise.
Yeah, it's their biggest cash cow as well. But they got other IPs. You mentioned Rocky, they got RoboCop, amongst others. And I think Amazon plans to utilize that library. They've already announced that they plan on reimagining James Bond in the future. However, that I think is just a rumored speculation. I don't think that was officially announced. Barbara Broccoli and Michael G. Wilson, who have been longtime producers for the Bond franchise, they said, "Don't worry, folks. We're still in charge."
Still in charge. Yeah, I mean, I with that, though, that's why we kind of came to the conclusion that we were going to be doing a James Bond movie this week because of MGM being bought. That's big news, and the fact that, you know, that maybe puts a little more financial power behind the James Bond franchise, so to speak, in terms of, like, just production. I know they spend no expense when it comes to James Bond production, but now you got Amazon money. That's big stuff. And so we decided.
Yeah, I was just gonna say MGM's been struggling financially for several years now, and they've been campaigning for a buyer for some time. So maybe with a power like Amazon, you know, owning a studio like that, perhaps we'll see, I guess, more frequently films from MGM, whether it's, you know, a new Creed movie or something. I don't even know if Creed's owned by MGM. But James Bond in particular, we've had a 6-year gap. Granted, the pandemic played a part in this, but we've had a 6-year gap since the last James Bond movie, which is the longest gap in the franchise's 60-year history. You have to think like finances might come into play for that kind of a reason. But yeah, so as you were saying, like, yes, we have this Bond news. We had the promise of Bill Paxton. How are we going to make it up? How are we going to make it up to the spit listeners?
How are we going to make it up to Bill Paxton in heaven?
Well, let me tell you. For the factory this week, and we'll get to it when we end up there.
When we're goddamn ready.
Yeah. We're going to factory. What character would Bill Paxton play if he was cast in GoldenEye?
Indeed, that is where we're getting at. That's why I said we're evolving. We're evolving like an agent that hasn't killed two people to an agent that has killed two people. And now they're a double L. Because I think that's how James Bond lawyer works. But that's not what we're talking about today. We're not talking about old Daniel Craig, Danny Craig, as we're allowed to call him because we're friends. Yeah, we're not talking about Danny Craig. We're talking about old Piercy Brosny. We're talking about Pierce Brosnan today because we watched my favorite James Bond movie. Top five for you? Top two even? I'm not sure.
Top two, and I was even mentioning it recently. It might even, it's creeping up to top number one as the years go by. Because for a long time, it's been GoldenEye, then it was Casino Royale. Wait, what did I say? It was Goldfinger. Goldfinger.
Yeah. I thought it was Goldfinger.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mix up my golds. It was Goldfinger, Casino Royale, GoldenEye. And then it started changing, and it was like, you know what? GoldenEye and Casino Royale are kind of tied at my second favorite. And it was just last year, I rewatched all the Bond movies again, and I was like, GoldenEye is my second favorite. It's like cemented. And we'll get into why, because it has to do, obviously, with the movie itself.
Yeah.
But as I'm getting older, I don't know.
Natalia is hot.
When I was a kid, she was not. But yeah, as an adult, yes.
Like, excuse me.
But yeah, I don't know. I it's my one of my more watched Bond films. It's definitely my most familiar. It was my first.
Mine as
and
well.
I'll mention other reasons why it's creeping up to my favorites firmly at two right now. But yeah,
I mean it has stayed my favorite. I think I've never changed it. It's never changed for me. Because at the end of the day, this was the first James Bond movie I watched. And on top of that, Pierce Brosnan is my James Bond. As in, like, you know, he's the James Bond I grew up with. If I think James Bond, I think Pierce Brosnan. Where I know a lot of my friends didn't grow up with James Bond movies, and they actually, like, they think I'm crazy that I think any of the Bond movies that aren't Daniel Craig Bond movies are good. I got into an argument with someone the other week that was arguing that, which Skyfall is phenomenal, don't get me wrong, but they were arguing that Skyfall, I was crazy to think GoldenEye was anywhere, like, even in the same stratosphere as Skyfall. And maybe, I mean, this is maybe from a critical standpoint in terms of, like, which is a better movie, so to speak. I mean, I think GoldenEye is a great movie, but Skyfall is, like, a very good movie as well and tells a very compelling story and whatnot, but what's the better Bond film? GoldenEye has it all, at least what I expect from my James Bond movies, because Pierce Brosnan, that was like his version. Every person who plays Bond, you know, you got Daniel Craig, he's a little more gritty and rough. You had Sean Connery, he's just gritty and rough with women. I read an article recently that was like top five most realistic psychopaths in movies, and Sean Connery's James Bond was like number three because of the way he acts towards women and like how he just murders people.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, it is rough. It obviously was not correct for him to do that then, and it isn't correct for him to do that now, but that's the way the character was.
What about Roger Moore?
Roger Moore was just...
Rough and bad.
Well behaved, and yes. I've seen what he did to Miss Goodnight.
Why does your Roger Moore sound like Gaston?
Because he's rough and bent. Bell? Roger Moore's Gaston.
Yes, your Roger Moore does. I mean, you almost sound like Roger Moore, but then it's just like,
it turns into Gaston. Hello, Bell. You will marry me, Miss Goodnight.
Holy
I'm
shit.
Going to kill the man with three nipples.
I guess that's Roger Moore's take at Bond.
Yes, that's all. If you could take one thing away from what Roger Moore has to say, he's going to kill a man with three nipples.
The man with the golden gun.
Nah,
just three nipples.
What if that was the title of that movie? The Man with Three Nipples.
It was the working title, but it didn't get past the the audience screenings.
Like, this sounds like a porn. Going back to what I was saying though.
Don't forget about George Lazenby and Timothy Dalton.
For whatever reason, anytime anyone ever says George Lazenby or Lazenby, well, I always think Lazenby. I think of that episode of The Simpsons from Treehouse Horrors. I think it's Treehouse Horrors number 13, where they get the automated house and it like starts to kill them, but they can like choose the voice and they're like, oh, you can even choose James Bond or whatever, and they're like, George Lazenby?
No, Pierce Brosnan.
Which, I mean, why wouldn't you want Pierce Brosnan in your house, just talking to you all the time?
The Matador!
You really think I didn't know you were Chinese intelligence, Chang? As I was saying, I think GoldenEye is the better Bond movie for me, because what I expect from Bond is what I got with the Pierce Brosnan movies. Very gadget-heavy, and just Pierce Brosnan's style. So, GoldenEye, I would argue, and I think everyone would agree, is the best Brosnan movie. So when I think James Bond, I think Brosnan, and then when I think the best James Bond movie, I go to GoldenEye because that's the best Brosnan movie. Which I think is actually, I mean, as you even said, you are probably the biggest James aficionado, James Bond aficionado I know. You saying that this is number two on your list and creeping up ever higher every year is very high praise. People at home might not understand this, but like, Gus beat me and a friend once in James Bond Seen It before we even got to go. Like, he just went around the entire map and beat us. Like, he answered every question right. And that was like 30 views of all the James Bond movies ago.
Yeah, 30 rounds of it.
Yeah, you've watched all 23 of them 30 times since then.
I've had people do this for me. I told them, like, randomly, tell like a different day, just ask me, who's James Bond? And when they do that, who do I think of first? Like, what visual pops in my head? And I've had people do that to me twice, and every time it's Pierce Brosnan. That's just who I think of, and it is a nostalgia thing. It is who you grew up with, and that's who we certainly grew up with. Not just the movies of that generation, but the video games. GoldenEye on the Nintendo 64. I mean, everyone and their mothers said everything they could about GoldenEye on the N64, but there's a reason for that, because it was such a good shooter and such a unique, well, not anymore unique, but a pioneering multiplayer experience, couch co-op anyways, not co-op, sorry, couch multiplayer. there was nothing like it at the time, and it, I think it's like the second or third best-selling Nintendo 64 game.
Makes sense. I mean, it was honestly a system seller, I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly. Can you tell me what the number one N64 game is that has sold the most unit or copies?
It would be Mario Kart would be number two, and then I would say, what's the title of it? Super Mario 64, number one, because it was a pack-in title.
Nope.
Really?
Nope.
Is that because it was a pack-in title that it's not included?
It wasn't a pack-in title.
I thought it was.
Nope.
Huh.
No. The number one most selling Nintendo 64 game was WCW NWO Revenge. I don't know why, but it was. And I could be wrong with that fact. It could also just be like one of the top five selling games, but I'm pretty sure it's the number one. I don't have the factoid in front of me. But going back to GoldenEye, you know, all the plethora of characters, whether they're from the movie or from past films, that introduced us to characters like Jaws and Oddjob and Mayday and Baron Samedi, who, you know, we at that point hadn't seen, you know, Moonraker, Goldfinger, View to a Kill, and so on, Live and Let Die, which included those characters. So seeing these people in this game, I just associated them.
Excuse me.
With that video game for such a long time.
I'm gonna break what you just said. You liar. I was right. Super Mario 64 is the best-selling N64 game. Sold 11 million copies, almost 12 million. Followed by Mario Kart 64 and then GoldenEye 007.
Where's WCW NWO Revenge?
Not even in the top 20. It's at 27.
What? Bullshit.
Yeah, it sold 1,888,000 copies. I was literally spot on. Super Mario 64, Mario Kart 64, and then GoldenEye 007. Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time, and then Super Smash Brothers.
I'll leave.
Banjo-Kazooie is at number 10. Pokemon Snap's at number 11. It took them this long to make a new one.
You know, one of my favorite memories with the GoldenEye video game was
watching my screen and cheating.
That was my second favorite. Now it was putting in the Game Shark, activating. Yeah, yeah. The game already had built-in codes like DK mode, where you had a tiny body and a big head, paintball mode, things like that. Slappers only.
Things that you have to pay for today.
Yeah, for sure. The Game Shark allowed access to different codes, different cheats, rather. And one of them was you could walk through doors. So what was interesting, in the multiplayer levels, you could only get to a certain point in the map, and the door would just be locked. So it would just be confined. These levels were used in the story mode as well, but they're much bigger in the story mode. So when you had that cheat on in multiplayer, you could literally go beyond that point in the map to where you're off map, but you're just running through, I guess, the framework of the level. And I always liked doing that. I think we played hide and seek, or hide and go kill, I think we called it.
Michael Myers. Yeah. To the modern audience. That's what we called it.
Isn't that what you kids call
it
now?
That's what we called it in Call of Duty. But it was the one everyone would hide, and then one person had a knife. They'd fight you and they'd kill you, but you couldn't shoot. You had to run away.
Yeah, that's good. But yeah, I remember doing stuff like that in that video game. And
don't treat it like I'm like that much younger than you. That what you kids call it these days.
Well, someone talked to me today about, was it called Untitled Goose Game?
Yeah. I talked Never to you about that it. The other week. No, I talked to you about that literally the other week.
I wasn't listening.
Because I talked to you about how Hades won the Dice Game of the Year. And I said, and you were like, oh, it's big. And I was like, yeah, Untitled Goose Game won last year. And you're like, what? I'm like, yeah, you're just like a goose and you go around screwing with people.
I am getting older. My memory's fading.
Yeah, see?
I do remember that now.
Yes. I don't know why I remember that exact concept to context. I know I was on my way to Home Depot, though. Let's give the people at home a little taste of your abilities here. I'm going to give you a 10-question Bond quiz here. I just looked up on the interwebs. Some of them are really easy. Others, I think will speak to your knowledge. First question: the James Bond movies are based on a series of novels by this British author.
Ian Fleming.
Correct. What Secret Service agency does 007 work for? What Secret Service agency does 007 work for?
Oh, MI6.
I was like, this is easy. What do you do?
Yeah, I wasn't listening.
How many kills does it take to be promoted to 00 status?
2.
Yes.
Considerably.
What was the first James Bond movie?
Dr. No.
Who performed the theme song for Live and Let Die?
Paul McCartney and the Wings. Yes.
What kind of car does James Bond drive in the movie Moonraker? I can give you multiple choices if you'd like.
In Moonraker?
Yes. Moonraker. This is where it kind of gets a little difficult.
Hold on.
If I had to guess, it's between two, but I'm not 100% sure. I'm looking at two of the two. They're out of the four, and I'm like, I think.
I was going to say the Lotus, but that's in Spy Who Loved Me, the previous film. I can't think of like a time where he's driving a car. So I'm going to say no car.
That is correct. He does not drive a car in that movie, which is stupid that you know that. What is Jaws's only line in the Bond movies? Only line in the Bond movies.
Well, here's to us.
Yes. What bikini-clad seashell hunter does Bond meet in Dr. No?
Honey Rider.
Indeed. What James Bond film features Christopher Walken as a billionaire industrial Max Zorn?
Beetle Kill.
And then how does Bond test his magnetic wristwatch in Live and Let Die?
He pulls the zipper down to undress an Italian woman.
Yes. Do you know that Italian woman's name, by chance?
Nah.
Yeah, it's Miss Caruso. That was just a bonus question. All right, we'll go 5 more questions. What does Bond name his martini in Casino Royale?
A Vesper.
Indeed. In Quantum of Solace, Bond insists on using the following cover. Teachers on sabbatical who?
Just won the lottery.
Yep. What kind of vehicle is 007 issued in Moonraker?
Kind of vehicle is he issued?
Yeah.
he rides in that gondola that has all the... the attachment, like he can drive it, and there's a double taking pigeon.
Yep, a Venetian canal gondola. How does Goldfinger have Jill Masterson killed?
Jill Masterson. She's covered in paint. Gold paint.
And paints her skin gold. Last question. What is Q's first name?
Q's?
Yes.
You.
You need a hint, I can give you one.
You can give me a hint? I might need one.
You find out in Never Say Never Again.
My least watched Bond movie. It's not even a real Bond movie.
So it doesn't count, damn it.
It's like, it's different. I've read this fact
before. Would you like me to give you the multiple choice?
If you do, I will get it, I'm sure. Right. So, yes.
Quentin, Qbert, Horatio, or Algernon?
Give them to me one more time.
Quentin, Qbert, Horatio, or Algernon?
I think it's Algernon.
It is. He calls him Algernon really? Or Algy.
I was going to say it's like Albert.
Yeah.
Or something.
I clicked on Qbert or Quentin first because I was like, that sounds right. Yeah, there you have it. You were basically, that one was the hardest one for you, but that was also from, like, your least watched film.
It's not even, like, in the MGM line of James Bond movies, so.
Yeah, I mean.
It came out in 1983, starring Sean Connery, who hadn't been in the role in 11 years, and they were going to compete with Octopussy that year. And it was the guy, I can't remember his name at the moment, but he sued Ian Fleming for the rights of Thunderball because him and Ian Fleming had wrote a screenplay for a TV show of James Bond, and the plot of Thunderball was the plot of the TV show. The TV show didn't end up getting made, and Fleming just adapted the screenplay to a book and published it with no credit to anyone else other than himself.
Smart.
So he got sued and lost. And then this gentleman, I can't remember his name right now. He had like the sole, he had the rights to the story of Thunderball. Therefore he had the rights to the name James Bond and Spectre and all kinds of stuff. So after, like a few years after the Thunderball came out as a film, you didn't hear Spectre be mentioned too much anymore because they didn't have the rights to it.
See, this is the shit I'm talking about. You shouldn't know this stuff. Should have done better in school. I'll end on this bonus question because it ties right into GoldenEye here. How does 007 infiltrate the Archangel chemical weapons facility in GoldenEye?
He has a sexy bungee jump.
Indeed. And that's where we'll kick off the GoldenEye episode here. The movie starts with one of my favorite openings in a Bond film.
Hell yeah.
With that, him just running down the dam. And I mean, it's just a really cool shot right away of him just running. It's a really great introduction to the character. Him running, doing an awesome bungee jump off this giant dam. And
real
then,
stunt. And that's then so cool.
Punching a guy in the face while he's taking a shit.
Sorry, forgot to knock.
If you could get punched by one Bond while you're taking a shit, which Bond would it be? Like, you're sitting there scrolling through Instagram, you look up, and there's a Bond there, and he just punches you. Which would it be?
I closed my eyes, and I saw Pierce Brosnan.
Yes, hanging upside down. But he doesn't punch you. He kisses you like Spider-Man.
I'd kiss him like Spider-Man.
Whoa there. I almost closed out of our stream. It's a great introduction to just a new Bond, because before this it was George Lazenby, correct?
Yep. Timothy Dalton.
So it's funny to think, because I feel such a disconnect in terms of like modern, like this movie brought Bond into the modern era, I feel. A lot more gadgets and even the noises that the film makes, the sounds, are very 90s-esque. This movie came out in 95, the only reason I know that, birth year. That's the only Bond movie I can actually say that with confidence. I'm like, that movie came out in 95.
When Timothy Dalton did his Bond movies in 1987 and 1989, when Roger Moore was getting ready to retire from the part, they actually had cast Pierce Brosnan.
But he was Remington Steele.
And that's exactly why he couldn't be Bond in 1987. He was in Remington Steele. The show got canceled. So he auditioned for Bond. He got the part, but then they decided to bring back the show because of the buzz Pierce Brosnan was generating. But because of that, and he was still contractually obligated for like so many years, even if the show was canceled or whatever, to like do the show. He couldn't do Bond because of Remington Steele. Then he did Remington Steele and the show got canceled again after one more season. So here we are. Timothy Dalton is now taking up the role of James Bond. This movie, his movies, both of his movies, they kind of were in a weird time in cinema history where the action movies were changing. Like, what people wanted in an action movie were changing. You had things like Predator and Die Hard, RoboCop.
Now you're a man.
Very gritty, like, buff dudes blowing shit up.
Saying Timothy Dalton isn't a buff dude blowing shit up?
Yeah, it was just, they're more gritty and violent. That was the thing. They were very violent at the time. And so James Bond was attempting to adapt to that era of action movie. It just never clicked, at least for me, for a lot of people. As the years have gone on, a lot of people have found a new love for Timothy Dalton's era of James Bond movies, specifically License to Kill, which is arguably the most violent of any Bond movie. Fun factoid, although not a known as being a violent film, Pierce Brosnan in this film, GoldenEye, has the highest body count. Bond killed 47 people in this movie, whereas License to Kill, which is known as being the most violent Bond movie, he only killed about 10.
Luke Skywalker killed like a million. So
he's the most deadly James Bond.
Yeah, Luke Skywalker is James Bond,
starring Mark Hamill.
The most whiny James Bond there is. Bond, you're going to Europe. But I was going to go to Toshi to pick up some power converters.
England needs you.
I mean, I did, to be fair, that was dumb, because I said, you're going to Europe. He's in England. England's in Europe.
Yeah.
But, like, oh, yeah, I thought it was in America.
I thought you meant England, PA. Anyway. So yeah, like so they didn't know what to do with the franchise after License to Kill. It didn't perform as well as they wanted to. Still successful, but not by much. So they decided to take some time. They were going through some financial woes then as well. And just what were they planning to do with the franchise? Well, they finally got their footing. They realized they had a script. It was a very odd script, and they contacted Timothy Dalton. Now, this is years later, and he had moved on. He's like, I did the role. I want to do something else. Like, thanks, but no thanks. And on to the next person they went. Well, they went. There were several other people that they reached out to at this time, but it ultimately went to our guy, Piercy Baby. Some interesting choices for the time were, like, Liam Neeson was considered, and so was Sam Neill.
I don't know about...
You almost had that.
I don't know if I see Sam Neill in James Bond role, because when I see Sam Neill, I think Alan Grant.
You can watch his audition.
His audition?
Yeah, it's on YouTube.
Oh, shit.
Really?
Unaware.
So yeah, then it instead went to the November Man himself, Pierce Brosnan.
That is what Pierce Brosnan's God-given name is.
And yeah, so GoldenEye, I will say, feels different than any other Bond movie while still being a very, very much a James Bond film. Would you agree?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I think that I think that these Brosnan movies are more techie than any other Bond movie out there. More, like, I think there's more gadgets in these films, and maybe that's just because I feel like they just leaned really heavy into the gadgets, and they're almost their own. They definitely feel more unique than the rest of the universe, the Bond universe, to me anyways. I know a Brosnan movie versus a Roger Moore or a Sean Connery or hell, even a Daniel Craig, where I feel like the Daniel Craig movies, the more newer ones, are not, they're straying away from the gadgets, so to speak. Where, like, I feel like by the end of Pierce Brosnan's run, they were like Fast and Furious quality of gadgets, versus like what it is now, where it's very more serious and more spy thriller without the gadgets.
They've gone away from the gadgets. But then with GoldenEye, you mentioned so gadget heavy, some classic ones like the laser watch, the grenade pen, things that sound like cliche weren't a cliche necessarily when this came out.
No.
Cliches get associated with it now, those kind of things. But classics for not only the franchise, but just, I don't know, in gadgetry in general, the exploding pen. The pen is mightier than the sword. Thanks to me, they were right. Don't touch that. It's my lunch.
Fantastic.
What are some highlights for you about this movie? What are some of your favorite moments? Because everyone who is a Bond fan almost unanimously loves GoldenEye. So what stands out for you?
I think the big thing is the overall plot of the movie. I enjoy the fact that, I mean, what they're trying to get a satellite, correct?
Yes.
That will basically shut down all the banks in the world and transfer all the money into them, their accounts.
Sort of. They can produce an EMP blast that'll shut off all the electronics and like send it back to the Stone Age, basically. So the plan is to target London. It doesn't just shut them off. It like makes them explode. So it's going to kill a lot of people. But the target is London, and they're going to transfer all the funds from all the banks in London to themselves. Yeah, be richer than God.
Which is a really cool plan, because it's just like, it's pretty simple, so to speak, but it's like classic Bond villain. Like, I'm going to do this and make a lot of money. But I think my big thing about this, with that, is all the different, there's a lot of characters, and there's a lot of memorable characters, and they're all original. Be it Natalia, being kind of a unique Bond girl, so to speak. I mean, she's very techie, and she's not, I always thought she was more like the damsel in distress, because she kind of is, but she has some badass moments, too. You have Boris, who's an interesting character, the hacker, that he kind of has like a double turn, and dies a very unique, fun death. Then you have Alec, the main villain of the movie, was awesome, because that's like not one of the first times. It's probably the most fleshed out you've ever seen another 00 agent. Because there are some Bond movies that do like have like, oh, there's more 00s. I forget what movie it is where they're like all sitting around a table and there's like multiple 00s sitting around a table.
I don't know.
But that's like, he's like one of the most fleshed out other 00s in the Bond universe, and he's a unique villain. And that Bond has a very like personal connection with him that's set up in the beginning of the film. You have Xena, right? That's your name?
Xenia,
not Xena. Jesus,
you've been calling her. You've been calling her Femke Jensen for years.
I'll call her my dream girl. That's what I'll call her. I
love you, dream woman.
When I die, I want to die like the captain did in this movie.
Happy.
Happy, and just Femke Jensen, whatever her name is, just squeeze me tight.
I can't breathe. Fun fact, we weren't allowed to watch that scene when we were younger. A firm pillow over the eyes, or a hand over the eyes, or a head turned from the parents. You
ever seen One Flew Over a Cuckoo's Nest finale? That.
Yeah.
I was waiting for something out of you, but I got nothing. Yeah. You're like, I didn't think about that, or I was just sad.
Yeah, I know. I was like, huh, okay.
Well, you said a firm pillow over the face.
Yeah, I was like, oh, lobotomy. Okay. Oh, the pillow. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, that's where I was going.
Yeah.
The legitimate ending.
So, years later, I introduced this movie to the lady, and I told her, like, I wasn't allowed to watch this scene when I was younger. She's like, well, go fucking figure. It's a brutal sex scene to the death.
But first time I watched it, I'm like, ah, she bit his lip. That had to hurt.
Now I'm like, ah, she bit his lip.
Well, I remember,
I wish she would bite my lip.
I remember, thinking as a kid, how'd she kill him? I don't get it. Thought they were having a good time. And the next thing I know, he's dead. This is what happens if you have sex.
But yes, that's that. But stuff like that makes Xenia such a classic, henchwoman or second tier Bond villain.
Fatale.
Oh, heavily. But
Fatale.
She's up there with the top classic Bond villains. I'd put her up there with Oddjob and Jaws as the top. And
Grace Jones.
Miss Volpe. Oh yeah, Mayday's pretty classic. Baron Samedi's classic. Knick Knack. There's so many, but Xenia's right up there. Boris is even up there too, if you ask me.
Boris is one of the most memeable Bond characters.
He's definitely my most quoted.
I spiked him.
Yeah.
I quoted that the other day because I've been in Call of Duty. I've been using these things called Cali sticks. They're just literal sticks that you beat people to death with. And I did that the other day, and my one buddy was like, what'd you just do? I'm like, I spiked them.
Start calling people slugheads.
Slughead.
Better look next time. Slughead. Yeah, I love Alan Cummings as Boris in this movie. Sean Bean as Trevelyan is classic Bond villain. If you ask me, I love that he is a fellow 00, so he's kind of James Bond's equal. Not only was he his friend, he knows his every move. They live similar lifestyles, just like he's the antithesis of Bond. He's the opposite. He's the bad where Bond is the good.
He's Bizarro Bond.
Kinda. And I'll tell you why this movie creeped to my second for sure. It was always on the fence between this and Casino Royale, and it jumped to number two very recently. It was Natalia Simonova.
Better than Eva Green.
In the world of James Bond, people who are fans of it, they're fans for many reasons, whether it's the action or the cars or the outfits or the Bond girls. The Bond girl is a category of the James Bond franchise. And Natalia is my favorite Bond girl. She became my favorite Bond girl from my most recent viewing of GoldenEye, or my second most. It was a few months ago. I've watched this movie three times in the last 6 months. But yeah, it just dawned on me. I'm like, Natalia is my favorite. This is just my opinion, so I'm going to speak from my brain. She's the best Bond girl. She has the best story, or at least the most compelling story, the most realized story within the movie. They give her, I think, I could be wrong. I probably am, because I'm just not thinking of any other scenes or times. This is the first Bond movie where the Bond girl has a lot of dedicated time to just her and what she's going through. Yeah. Her introduction, her introduction and her surviving this attack on Severnine, which is the
server.
It's the main server for the GoldenEye targeting system. That's 15, 20 minutes of the movie just with her.
It makes you care about her more because it shows that absolutely. She's not just a body, which is a lot of James Bond girls are just there to be kind of attractive pieces of film. That's generally the cliche of it all. Whereas her, you get to know her right away. You get some character building between her, Boris, and her friend, and then her friend dies. And so, then you don't know what happened to Boris, and you're left to think that she just watched all her friends die and all her colleagues die, and it makes you care about her more, and you're more invested in her journey, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, not to be like this, but it was a factor, certainly. When I was younger, I didn't think of Natalia as being like my favorite Bond girl, like in the, I'll say in like the looks department, what I was attracted to.
Prepubescent slash pubescent boy.
Yeah. But, she was dressed, you know, in a long skirt and a blue sweater. I'm like, eh, whatever. As an adult, as an intellectual, I was like, oh my God, she's taking my breath away.
You're beautiful.
Yeah. You're beautiful, Midge.
You're beautiful.
But
watch
my
as
favorite
I climb up on this tack for you.
My favorite thing about Natalia is
she's very useful.
How useful she is. Yeah, she if anything, she, not Bond, saves the world, saves
I
the
mean,
day.
She is ultimately the one that does it. Bond just stops the villain. She stops the actual event.
Exactly. Yeah,
she's
the one.
Credit for that.
She changed the access codes. I can break her codes. Shoot him. He means nothing to me. Like
you're
that.
Just quoting everything.
Yeah, I'll just quote every line in the movie.
I quote a line from this all the time that I don't even think it ever needs quoted, but it's, yo, Jimbo!
Yeah.
I quote that all the time. That's a throwaway line.
There's another character, Wade, and Valentin Tchaikovsky, played
Walter
by Hagrid.
Okay. Only three men use that gun. I killed two of them. That's a great line. It's a great fucking movie.
I'm curious because I wonder if it's nostalgia that's blinding us or if fresh eyes love this movie too. The lady and I, we do what we call bond in bed. You took that once as we connect. We talk about our feelings. We're bonding. No, we literally sit in bed and
we're because you just wear your bond on your sleeve. You're James Bond.
We sit in bed, eat food, and watch a James Bond movie
bond
every week.
Bond over bond.
Hell yeah. And so we've watched almost half of them together. And this is her first time seeing any of these movies. And GoldenEye not only has been her favorite, but she just loved that movie.
Yeah, that's a great movie. Like I said,
yeah.
I mean,
you said
I watched this movie with the wife before we were married, and she liked it all right. It wasn't necessarily her film. She doesn't really, I don't know, they just weren't her,
it's not her
style.
Cup of tea.
Yeah, but what she took away from it, literally, what it was the no more foreplay. That scene. She looked at me. She's like, no wonder you like this movie. I'm like, no.
What do you mean?
I'm like, no, not at all. Go in the other room real quick.
When the lady and I were watching it, the scene on the train when he's going to derail us. And then he gets on the train and they're all like, Trevelyan's stumbling for the gun. Bond steps on. He's like, and then Trevelyan's like, why don't you just be a good boy and die? You first. You second. Margo was like, fuck yeah.
I mean, yeah, no, it's a good moment. There's, like we said, it's so quotable. There's so many great quotes. And part of the reason that the lines hit is because of the development of all the different characters. Even right down to, and his name, I'm drawing a blank on his name, but the Russian general that, like, defected and he, like, joined their plot.
Mishkin.
He's great. Just in, like, he's, like, such a weasel. And he's, like, constantly, like, drinking out of his flask and, like...
I'm sorry. I was thinking his superior, the guy with the goatee. That's Mishkin. No. You're talking of General Ormov.
Yes. Yeah.
My mistake. Well, obviously. Like, hey, yeah, you know what? He's great too. He's a great henchman character. And at first if this was your first time watching it, we kind of grew up with it. But he is almost seen as the main villain of this movie.
Until the reveal. Because the
until the reveal.
Alec dies in the first, what, 10 minutes? 15 minutes?
Yeah, yeah.
Get the doll, Alec! There's a draft! It's so good.
You can't win.
You idiot! What's he say?
You'll blow the gas tanks.
Oh, man. That's another thing I want to talk. I mean, this is more of a this is almost like our My Hero episode where we took a movie, but we more or less just discussed the franchise for mostly. Another thing I want to talk about, one of my favorite, I mean, we discussed slightly the intro of this movie. You're introduced to 007, Pierce Brosnan's Bond. You're introduced to Alec Trevelyan, 006, and they're trying to blow up this facility. And ultimately, Alec dies, or so you think. It was all kind of a setup. That moment after, when he makes his escape, and it starts, you know, playing the music, and he's chasing down that plane that's taken off, and just the plane creams off the hill or off the cliff and is going down, and he's just chasing after it, and he gets in it, and you don't really know if he made it or not, and then the plane just goes over and boom, 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 and the music hits. So good. Like, I got goosebumps right now. I'm sure you do too.
I got something else too. Yeah, Tina Turner's
plane isn't the only thing that got up.
Tina Turner's GoldenEye is one of my favorite theme songs from a Bond movie, but also like the visuals, like the credit, like opening credit visuals. Very, very cool and symbolic of, I guess, the mood and the setting of this movie. And it kind of, the opening itself, the opening credits as well, really sets the mood for what this movie's gonna be. But yeah, that theme song, is that your favorite Bond theme song?
It's between that, I really do love me some Live and Let Die. I'd argue Live and Let Die is probably my most listened to. It's up there. Now I was just had it stuck in my head a second. Casino Royale's theme. You said how this one had great visuals, and I immediately went to Casino Royale's opening visuals with all the cars.
Absolutely. So good. Yeah, absolutely. I don't know what my favorite is. It changes all the time. It's fair and safe to say Goldfinger. I actually really love Sam Smith's Writings on the Wall.
Yeah.
My most listened to is Skyfall. Like, I have iTunes proof of that. It's not my favorite though. It's up there. I really like it. But I like ones that people don't like. Like, also, Quantum of Solace is Another Way to Die.
That was your ringtone.
It was. And then Die Another Day, Madonna. Like, I don't know why. I love that theme song, but it's a lot of people hate it, which is understandable. But, and GoldenEye's great as well. The music in this movie, very bizarre. Very bizarre throughout. Like, because you'll hear, like, the Bond theme song every now and then, but then you'll get, like, bow, 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 bow. Like weird choices, musically.
Weird 90s sounds.
Yeah, a lot. But you know, it has the most satisfying sound to me. Also, where it's just like I can't produce it from my mouth, but it's like a kind of sound. If you listen
sound.
To,
I don't think the sound actually happened.
Oh, yeah, through the microphone. Yeah, no. It's weird to make with your mouth. But if you listen to the GoldenEye suite, it's on Spotify. It's riddled throughout there. It's a very satisfying sound to me. The music's very strange, but I love it. I really do. It's no other Bond movie did it. Like, even at, like, during the production, they're like, we need to reel this back, and they had to like have the composer change some things. They never brought him back on. They actually brought in David Arnold to, I think, do some work with the current score. And then in the following movie, Tomorrow Never Dies, they had him as the full-on composer. And then David Arnold continued up until Skyfall to do the Bond films.
I mean, ultimately, the last big thing that I want to talk about outside of that music, because I did mention how this had a lot of like unique sounds, and I know exactly the sound you're talking about, and it's a sound that's almost synonymous with Bond for me. Again, can't really do it with your mouth. I wanted, because this recently kind of became no more, is the satellite dish at the end of the movie, where the finale takes place, the final fight. I mean, that's iconic to me in two ways. One, just it's a really cool set piece, and a really neat final boss fight, so to speak. And it's a really cool ending. It has a really quotable one-liner.
Do you remember the name of that satellite level in GoldenEye?
No, that was what I was going to say. Was the second iconic part was that battle where it's you're chasing Alec and he turns around and you have to like fight villains, and it's like it reminds me of like a classic like speed level you'd run into in like Metroid, where you have to like escape before the planet blows up. And you're like racing against time. It felt very much like that, where you're like chasing him through like this level, a really cool level.
It was called The Cradle.
Cradle of Life. Recently fell apart, right? That's
yeah. They dismantled it. Yeah. It's a shame. I would have loved to like go there someday and see it. I think it was in Mexico.
I thought it was in Brazil, to be honest.
It might have been in South America. I'm not too sure. You're probably right. I think it was in South America. So if we're wrong, then we're wrong. Golden. In the movie, it was in Cuba. But
Puerto Rico.
Puerto Rico. Okay.
In the final fight taking place at almost like the very bottom, and underneath is just that bowl of like concrete, basically. And they're fighting on top of it, and he gets Alec there, and Fanglin James?
No, for me.
And he just drops him. That's pretty brutal. That's up there with the guy from Castle Cagliostro. That's up there. It's brutal.
That's definitely number two, top two favorite movie death for me.
He just drops
villain movie death.
He just drops them from a very high height into literal concrete.
But that doesn't kill him either. I mean, it would eventually.
Yeah.
He's bleeding internally, but
then he just falls on him. If he would have screamed, he just looked at it like Willem Dafoe and Spider-Man and went, oh.
But you know who doesn't die is Boris.
He gets frozen real good.
Nah, because he's invincible. And then he gets frozen.
Yeah, that's a great moment. I mean, like I said, Xenia's death.
She always did enjoy a good squeeze.
She just gets like, that's brutal. I mean, it does have a pretty... It has very brutal take. There is, I mean, you even said you don't think of it too violent, but it has a lot of violent stuff in it. So, I mean, ultimately, there's just a lot of, you said it's not that like brutal of a movie, but you think of it on the top of your head. But then when you really dive into it, it's pretty brutal. And I guess I keep saying like the last thing we're going to talk about, but we got the tank chase scene.
I was waiting for you to finish what you were going to say and then be like, we got to talk about that tank chase.
So good. Iconic. I mean, that's probably to me the coolest Bond moment. I mean, he just busts through in a tank and chases him down in a tank. Like that's fast, like I said, Fast and Furious levels of bullshit, but it's really fun.
It's practical. Yeah. It's real.
Yeah, it's like everyone. It's the class. All right, how do we change up the classic car chase? What if he chases them in a tank? It's like, sure, that's awesome. Yeah, it's like he's 100% causing more damage than he's doing any good. But at the same time, hell, it looks cool.
Well, yeah, and it just shows visually what the character is willing to go through to save Natalia. Not because he loves her, cares about her, but she's valuable. She knows things. She has skills. She is needed to save the world, kind of thing. So he's, I'll save you by any means necessary.
For England. But yeah, no, it's a great moment. I remember my buddy Pork, I got him to watch this movie. He had never watched a James Bond movie before. And he laughed so hard when he bust through in that tank because it was just such a badass moment.
Yeah.
It was like you didn't expect it up until that point that he was gonna, like, bust through a wall with a tank. It's just a classic Bond moment.
Mm-hmm.
But indeed, that is we only scratched the surface of this movie. And I guess, I mean, in a way, we did spoil several parts, but it's definitely a Bond movie that I think that if you've never seen it before, definitely go to and watch it. And hopefully if you did watch it before listening, hope you enjoyed it, because it is, I think it's really the antithesis of what Bond is, at the end of the day.
Indeed. It's a great starter Bond as well. If you've never seen a James Bond movie, like an intro Bond film, GoldenEye might be the one. I always say GoldenEye or Casino Royale, but if you like a classic, you know, Goldfinger or something like that.
Yeah.
But indeed, let's take it to our Bill Paxton movie factory. So we're not lying to the spit listeners from last week.
No, yeah, so last week we mentioned that we were going to watch a Bill Paxton movie. However, we decided to change it up due to the MGM acquisition, or I guess Amazon acquisition of MGM. So this week we're going to submit this movie, GoldenEye, to the factory. That's where we take the film we just watched and we imagine what it would look like if it came out today. Who would direct it? Who would compose it? Who would star? Same film, same cast, same film, same story. Modern booking, though. Modern cast and crew. However, like we said at the beginning of the show, we're changing it up a little bit here as we evolve and get deeper into our third year of doing this. And so we have decided that we will be casting Bill Paxton as one of the characters in this film. And that's it. It's a simple factory. Just who would Bill Paxton play? And so with that being said, I mean, I think the choice is obvious. The choice is obvious. Bill Paxton's got to be... Natalia. No, I was gonna say Xenia. Joe, maybe I can't breathe.
Shit.
See, you go radio silent. Like, I can't hear your laugh. So it's like I'll make a joke and I just hear.
Yeah.
Ah! Like, it's like a 5-second delay on any reaction because there's just no laugh.
Because I'm doing my quiet laugh.
Yeah. I need you to, like, shit yourself so you laugh harder.
Fuck. What if Bill Paxton was Boris Grishenko?
Bill Paxton can do a Russian accent?
No, he'd be playing Russian.
He'd still be himself.
Yeah, he'd still talk like this. And he couldn't figure out Natalia's code. She's like, "Oh, game over, man. Game over. Fucking game over."
He's like typing on the computer at the beginning, and they're like, he's like slug heads. But instead, as he's typing, he's just like, "Oh man, tornado's coming. Tornado's coming on us, slug heads. You tell it's gonna veer east and then right, and then pull in the satellite."
Stupid. Stupid. That's what he says when dude does.
Bill Paxton would have survived a lot of stuff in this movie. He probably would have survived the ice.
He would have been invincible in this movie.
He would have survived so much stuff. He would have seen Bond's every move. He needs to be Alec, obviously. because he sees every move of a tornado. So therefore, Bill Paxton would know every move of Bond. I mean, he'd get a better death than his character in Aliens got, an off-screen one.
And if you think about it, maybe if Bill Paxton was James Bond, opening scene, jeez, Bond bungee jumps right off the dam. Not this guy, not Bill Paxton, because he's Dinky Winks, and he has that helicopter like propeller thing, and he'll just fly his way down.
Not Bill Paxton. He'll just jump off and fly, flap his arms a little bit. Tornado come, grab him, pick him up, land him gently on the ground. Brock Lesnar will come, grab him, put him on his shoulders, and climb down the hill with him on it. F5 took him.
You see, my therapist just helped me get through those beers from last week.
Yeah.
And he just brought them all back up again.
Brock Lesnar grabbing you and carrying you down the side of a mountain. You're like, no! Don't drop me.
I'd be like, drop me, please. Don't take me.
You don't want to be on Brock Lesnar's back, but at the same time, you don't want to fall down that mountain. Like, let me go. He's like, very poor choice of words. He lets you go.
TF5s, yeah.
Like, from this height, fall won't kill me, but the F5 will.
Shit. What is it about Bill Paxton that people love? Like, he's got that love, like Jeff Goldblum style love, Nick Cage style love.
Is it that he's
why do people love Bill Paxton?
See, I don't think he's like memeable though. I think it's more maybe he seems very down to earth, like believable kind of actor. Like anyone could be a Bill Paxton kind of deal, you know? Like you could do it. You could be an actor.
One of my favorite Bill Paxton lines, well, I just thought of another one, is quit your grinning and drop your linen. But also in Nightcrawler, he's like, I can't remember the exact line, but he says something like, you must not know how good this offer was, because if you did, you'd be sucking my dick.
Whoa.
I love that one. But my favorite Bill Paxton line is in True Lies, when Arnold Schwarzenegger is pretending to possibly want to buy a car from this car salesman being played by Bill Paxton. Arnold is a spy, and this movie's cool because it's like, what is the spy like at home? But he thinks his wife might be cheating on him with this guy. With this car salesman. So he's trying to get some information riding around with the car salesman. And he's like, are you talking to any women? I'm paraphrasing. And he's like, yeah, I'm working on this girl. He says all kinds of houndish things. Like, I think he says something like boobs will make you want to beg for buttermilk. Ass like a 10-year-old boy. And that, and then Arnold like punches him and kills him, but then he's just daydreaming. But that line, I you said a lot. I don't.
Maybe I quoted a lot. That.
Yeah, exactly. I always go ask like a 10-year-old boy, you know, from True Lies.
Yeah. Bill Paxton said that, not me.
Bill Paxton, like, oh, okay.
It's like when you're a kid and you're like, hell. I mean, hell's a place, so it's not a swear. I can say it because it's a place. It's the same thing. Right. Same concept.
Exactly. So, Bill Paxton, we miss you. We missed our chance to have you in GoldenEye. That could have been something, whether he was Bond or Boris or Xenia. I can't breathe, Joe.
What? I finally caught up with you.
I was laughing earlier. You just couldn't hear it.
For England, for England, Bill? No.
No.
For Joe.
For the Titanic. For the heart of the ocean.
For the heart of the ocean. That's what after Titanic cuts and he finds out that Rose fucking threw it overboard, he actually drops her into the ocean like that.
Yeah.
You need to go back to the sea too.
Indeed. So I'm glad we got to talk about the topical James Bond franchise. Amazon bought MGM, so why not talk about a James Bond movie? Ben's favorite, GoldenEye. We in the past have talked about my favorite Bond movie, Goldfinger. Check it out. But then we also talked about Die Another Day in preparation for, at the time, the upcoming Bond movie, which is now coming out a year and a half after that one. But that was the first episode we recorded before going remote in person. So check that one out as well.
Indeed, indeed, indeed. And so finding our way to the end here of the show and discussing the Bond franchise, I mean, the question that I was going to ask, you kind of took away from me. And that was, what's your favorite theme song or opening? So I don't really have a question. I think we talked enough in this episode, though.
We did. You asked me like 18 questions earlier with the trivia.
So I think we're good. So let's go ahead and close our hat here. So with that being said, that is the show, everyone. We hope you enjoyed it. If you liked what you heard, be sure to check us out over on Audioboom. That's our primary site. That's where we post the show to first, and then subsequently it gets shipped out everywhere else. So Spotify, iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts, hey, we're there. You can also find us over on Twitter. We are at The Bros Movie Pod. That's where we'll be posting links to the show, clips of the show, and different memes that Gus makes there and at. You can also find us over on Facebook.
Hey, go to Facebook. You'll find us there for England, for James, for Bond, James Bond. I like to post memes of what we're watching each and every week, as well as the links to the things Ben mentioned a moment ago, like Audioboom, Spotify, Twitter, and that.
So that is the show. We hope you enjoyed it. But until next week, for England, brothers.
For England, brothers.
For England, brothers.